while it is an analytical undertaking, it's also a creative project. Yeah, really finding ways on how you can make sense of numbers and how you can use those to implement different pathways towards a circularity vision.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models. He worked for multiple digital agencies, built ventures on behalf of different clients, and founded his own company, Circonomics, a B2B marketplace for batteries. Last year, he joined Fiond by Adelphi, a leading think and do tank and consultancy for climate, environment, and development. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. It's also nice meeting you today.
Patrick, you also have a background in economics, financial mathematics, and statistics. Are there any metrics you track in your personal life?
Oh, yes, I do. So I'm a runner, passionate runner. So of course, I'm wearing a smartwatch for this very purposes, and I really enjoy looking at the development that I'm doing as an athlete time and time again. So these metrics are really part of the fun in running. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm also in running, and it's mostly about beating your own personal best and taking care of your personal health, yeah, at the same time, balancing both. And are there any metrics, sustainability related, you look after?
In my personal life? Not really. And I think this is a good sign, because most of the time, I do not really have to think in order to make more sustainable decisions. Because most of the... I think the carbon that I would emit would have been in business, but we have a very good policy in place there. So this has been taken care of by Fiond and Adelphi, luckily. So I don't have to care about that all too much and can focus on other things.
Okay, cool. Let's discuss other things, but also let's stick to metrics. Why are metrics necessary for the circular economy, if they are necessary?
Well, there's that one quote. I'm not really sure who is the actual author or inventor of it, but let's say it's Peter Drucker for now. And he said something along the lines, "You can't manage what you can't measure," and that is ever so true with circularity, of course. It's a numbers game. It's a big numbers game. And in order to reduce resource consumption, to decouple it from financial growth and well-being, we have to look at the numbers. And if we don't measure them, we cannot change anything meaningfully.
True. Absolutely true. When we talked before, we agreed to look a bit deeper here and do it with an example. Can you tell us a bit more about the situation of the company? What was the starting situation when you first encountered the colleagues?
Yeah, absolutely. So the company we're talking about is Corozo. Corozo is the largest flexible packaging manufacturer in Europe. They're based in Turkey. And, well, being a plastics producer or manufacturer, of course, they are heavily impacted by upcoming regulations, especially in the EU. And the EU is their target market. So they were at a point when they were asking themselves and us, how can we become compliant with new regulations? And, of course, that's the starting point for almost any company that is then dealing with circularity or CSRD in a broader sense. How can we just make sure that we are compliant? And then based on that, maybe build on top of that. So they weren't sure about how can they set meaningful targets specific to their business. And how can they measure their progress and can report against these targets? So that was really crucial for them. And specifically with the circular economy, in their sector, there were a lot of targets that they would have to hit in the short, medium, and long term. And yeah, we were helping them to actually map the policy landscape, then helping them to define targets, and then do a baseline measurement on how far they are in their transition to reach these targets, and then found some deviations there, and then built a roadmap and implemented that roadmap along the way over the course of many months. And by this, helping them to become compliant and become more circular in the end. But we will talk about that more in detail.
Yeah. Okay, so I get it. The trigger point was to comply with upcoming regulation and see what opportunities come with that. When you talk about Corozo, I normally know a company is as diverse as the number of employees it has. Who was your counterpart? Was it at board level? Was this the sustainability or the compliance department? Were they already aligned, or was it also about raising awareness internally?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the actual sponsor of the initiative was the CEO itself. So it was a top-down decision, or the need for action was very apparent. So we had the opportunity to work with the board. But then eventually the work began by involving all of the relevant stakeholders within the company, but also external stakeholders, and then helping with the alignment and structuring the overall course of action.
Okay. I mean, that sounds great that you have the mandate from the CEO directly. That makes things easier. What kind of framework did you use to measure the status quo and with regard to circularity?
So Fion by Adelphi is an official implementation partner of CTI, so the Circular Transition Indicators by WBCSD. We are one of the first and most involved consultancies in developing the overall methodology and the framework further. And I think Corozo is also a flagship case for CTI. We've been working with CTI in that case as well. But we have complemented CTI with the Circulytics enablers component so that we can merge the qualitative and the quantitative parts of circularity assessment. Mm-hmm. And that's very important because having the metrics is, of course, crucial. But looking at the enablers, so the resource and the capability base of a company is equally important because you can later utilize them in order to optimize your metrics, right? If you're very good at inventing things, of course, you would use that in order to optimize the circularity of your products, for example. That could be an outcome, yeah? So we have built that implemented assessment that combines CTI and parts of Circulytics, so two of the most renowned methodologies there are for circularity assessment.
Okay, great. So let's dive a bit deeper. Can you tell us a bit more about CTI? What does it stand for? How does it work?
Absolutely. So in general, we're always talking about reporting, right? Reporting is pretty much the centerpiece of our work day in and day out. And reporting also means that you have to have your numbers ready. You have to have your data points ready. Within ESRSE 5, around about 84 data points have to be reported. And these need to be combined to lay out a clear circularity strategy. So it needs to make sense in the overall bigger scheme of things, right? So you have to have robust numbers. And CTI is really helping to collect these numbers. A fun fact, or not so fun fact, while around 77% of European companies touch upon circularity in their sustainability reports, only 22% of them put actual numbers to back these claims up, which is, of course, a problem with CSRD on the way. And also, it doesn't really help with your, you know, with your investors. You know, if they look at your reporting and you cannot back up mm-hmm. your claims by numbers, you run into problems. So you need to have a methodology in place that helps you collect these numbers in a robust way. And CTI is really, from our perspective, the best solution for that, as it is fully aligned with CSRD reporting duties, and it really helps to have that framework that is constantly used by industry peers of yours, but that is also constantly further developed by experts.
Okay.
And yeah, CTI in that sense is a great tool, and you can use it with or without any external support. You can also try to start it to use it yourself in your company.
Okay. CTI stands for Circular Transition Indicators, right?
Yeah, correct.
So how does the framework itself work?
So in general, if you look at CTI from a graphic design perspective, yeah, we always have these graphics where material flows in, is then used within the company mm-hmm. to build products and services, and then there's an outflow of materials or waste and whatsoever. And we know that concept from MFA. So material flow analysis. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the, would say, theoretical and practical baseline methodology that is used in CTI. However, there are some, I would say, tweaks and optimizations that have been put in place so that it is more usable and more agnostically usable for all kinds of sectors and industries. Namely, we have a range of indicators that you can then pick, like it is a menu, right? And you can only pick those indicators that are relevant to your business, that are material to your mm-hmm. business. And these are organized in four specific loops. That's how we call it, right? Closing the loop, optimizing the loop, valuing the loop, and then impact of the loop. And these four pillars really help you to create a really substantial assessment of your circularity measures.
Okay. And is there any hierarchy between the indicators? So is there at the end one number you can look at and optimize?
Sure. Usually, and that's also what is going to be important with CSRD, you have the material circularity as your, so if you want to call it like that, your flagship metric mm-hmm. that you are going to report against. And if you want to optimize your material circularity, depending on your business, your capabilities, but also depending on your sector in general, you have different options to become more circular, right? You have different levers that you can use to be better in bringing material circularity to life within your organization or even your value chain. And you can really help. You can really do that by looking at the menu CTI offers to you, and then using the actual assessment to find hotspots, and then define measures on how you can optimize these hotspots, these material flows.
Okay. Let's come back to the picture of material flow. So you have the inflow, you mm-hmm. have so all the materials that come into production. Then you have in the center, you have the production stage, and then you have the outflow of mm-hmm. your products. Can you give us let's say, a specific example, let's say, for the inflow? So how does an indicator look like? What's the name? And what are you looking at?
Mm-hmm. So if we start at the very left, right, depending on the boundaries that you mm-hmm. set as your assessment frame, you have a material, you have an inflow, right? You have resources and you have materials that pretty much go into your production processes. And you then make the differentiation between those. Are those virgin resources, or are these of non-renewable resources, or are they non-virgin recycled resources, and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. You can also expand that on your the energy and the water resources that you need to use, and the same goes for the right hand then of the cycle. You look at your circular outflows, but also your linear outflows, and yeah, you put numbers behind that.
Okay, so actually you have, let's say, a share of renewable materials in your material inflow, for example.
Exactly, but that is also the very tricky part, right? Where you need some technical expertise, and where you have to involve knowledge bearers within your organization, but also with external experts, such as us, for example, who look at your products that you actually want to produce, and we look at, okay, how recyclable, or what's the recyclability potential actually of your inflow materials if you use them in your product like that. Do you actually have the ability to supplement those with others in order to still maintain the product performance that you're aiming for, and so on? So that then becomes a bit more tricky, right? To really then put the technical and the domain expertise into these numbers.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's not always black and white if you discuss certain, let's say, potentials, especially when it comes to recovery potential. The circular economy is also developing. Can you name an example from Corozo where you had, let's say, discussions about whether this is actually possible to recover or not?
Of course, there are some boundaries, and especially if you look at packaging, in very generic terms, you have two types of packaging. You have non-food packaging, and you have sensitive packaging for mm-hmm. food, right? And if you look at food packaging, of course, in Europe, you have some boundaries there and regulations that just prevent you from putting more recycled content into these types of packaging. Mm-hmm. So hey, you have a natural ceiling here on what you can use, right? And only if you have this context available, only then you can actually report in a meaningful way, right? So that external stakeholders understand, okay, why is the recycled content in the inflow lower as compared to other product categories, for example, or to other sectors? Why can't you put more recycled content in that? And the reason is it's under the current law, it's not allowed, right? So that was one discussion point, for example. But then we found other ways on how we can optimize the overall material circularity, right? You would usually find that at the end of life, if you look at the end of life of products, that's all theory, right? That's a potential for recovery of products. But if you don't follow on with that, and if you don't implement measures so that products that recycling does not happen within your company boundaries, then it cannot materialize, right?
Okay.
So that's a part that we've been discussing a lot as well.
So let me just try to summarize what you've said and correct me if I'm wrong. So you mentioned earlier that first it also helps to decide on a certain scope. So are we looking at a product category or are we looking at the whole company? Are we just looking at one specific facility? But let's stick to the example you gave. Let's say Corozo wants to separate between non-food and food products. And then I can say, okay, for the scope of non-food packaging, I can look at the share of virgin material in the inflow, at bio-based materials, for example, in the inflow. When we go to the outflow, I can also look at the actual circular share of these kind of products, and I can look at the potential circular share to see what's theoretically possible and what are we actually realizing. Do I get that right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And circular share in the outflow, I mean, circularity comes in different shapes, yeah? It's about reuse, it's about recycling, it's about, remanufacturing, maybe not so relevant for that case, but how do you define also a circular share in the outflow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that then is really specific to the product or the sector in which you're working, right? If you look at packaging, usually you're looking at a recycling, flexible packaging, right? You would be looking at recycling, not so much as in reuse or anything like that. And if you look at other product categories, assets that maintain usefulness for a longer lifespan and that can be repaired, for example, or upgraded, maybe even downgraded, if it makes sense, then you can account for that as well. You can also put numbers behind that. But in that specific case, of course, we were looking pretty much on a material flow basis, on how circular can the outflow of the product can become. So what are our recoverability, recyclability potentials, and how far along are we in actually realizing this potential?
Mm-hmm. It might be a tricky topic just to listen if we're talking about flow diagrams. So we agreed we will also make a chart accessible that illustrates this logic. And we'll also then share the link to the CDI framework in the show notes, and I'll check if I can also find some other examples. Patrick, can you give us also some examples in terms of numbers or so ranges? I mean, most of us work towards a circular share of 100%. Yeah, that's the goal of the circular economy, to have no waste. But where are we in reality?
So we will see that once the CSRD is in full, is fully fledged and operational, right? Because then we have transparency on at least a large panel of companies, also within comparable sectors, and this level playing field is really going to be, I believe, a game changer for innovation, because that already now is really driving developments within companies, and they're thinking about how they can engineer their material circularity and how they can optimize this number. So that's I think that's really a booster for circularity. But of course, in the very beginning, in many sectors, we have low numbers because the general business context did not really incentivize management to work towards circularity. It takes a lot of thinking and understanding that circularity is actually good for profitability and that it is good for resilience and so on and so forth. And there have been academic studies on that, but usually these don't reach boardrooms, right? But now with regulation on the way, everyone is forced to think about it in a way that goes beyond compliance. And this is also what we have seen with Coroso and other customers that we've been working with. Once we have gotten compliance out of the way and had numbers mm-hmm. at our disposal now, then ambition was actually created. So how can we get better than competitor X? Or, we are so good at in our R&D department, how can we instrumentalize yeah. that in order to work on our product formulas and so on and so forth? And that's then really when the magic happens, right? And CTI and all that is really a great tinder for that. And in our case, we have helped to go from a very low number to 35% material circularity, which is really great for the sector. And the good part is also you can link those this material circularity with annual carbon mm-hmm. savings, right? And that's also a number and a metric that everyone understands these days. So you can really convert one figure into another that is better understood by the general public and other stakeholders.
I'm in particular excited about the moment this ambition kicked in. I said, when we have the status quo, people say, come on, that's not good enough. Mm-hmm. So was it like that? So let's say humans, employees of Coroso were just, let's say, triggered and challenged.
I think ambition to some degree is necessary to get things going, right? And of course, at some point, you have to look at the numbers and choose pathways that would maintain profitability while also optimizing the degree of circularity. Mm-hmm. Right, and there are always pathways and options for that. There's never no option. Right, there's always an option in different pathways. Whether you optimize your data collection, whether you optimize your procurement mm-hmm. processes, your productions and your operations, your product design and development. There are plenty of options on how you can, really optimize your circularity.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that the CTI is a framework to report, but not necessarily to set targets. You already linked the circularity to carbon. Do you also see that targets get more relevant in this discussion?
So in general, it's of course absolutely material to put like measurable and time-bound targets. That's absolutely key, and there's no workaround for that. If you're, for example, a public company, or if you're planning to go in public, mm-hmm. you have to face investors that demand quantifiable targets. And if you cannot provide those, you will fall short in different ESG ratings, and eventually you might not be as investable as other assets. So you wouldn't do the organization any good if you wouldn't have any objective and measurable, also ambitious targets set. Mm-hmm. And you also have to link those with actions. So that's a key principle of CSRD. You have to link yeah. your actions with your targets and your targets with your actions. So that's the causality of reporting and then market reactions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So CTI is in that sense great, because it gives you the starting point from which you then can start and set targets and think about ways on how you can reach those targets and what is necessary to reach those targets in terms of what can we use from our existing resources and capability base, what are some investments that we maybe have to undertake. And if you have the numbers ready, then you can also look for financing. Yeah. And this, you don't have to, you know, invest everything out of your cash flow. You can also apply for green finance instruments. And if you have a good reporting scheme like CTI in place for that, it makes it a lot easier to apply for these grants and funds.
Yeah. And were there other surprises or learnings that also surprised you as a team?
Yeah, plenty of those. While it is an analytical undertaking, it's also a creative project. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really finding ways on how you can make sense of numbers and how you can use those to implement different pathways towards a circularity vision that we have also in our case created together with the different stakeholders of the company at Coroso. That was really surprising mm-hmm. to me. Also how we said it in the beginning, everybody was looking beyond compliance mm-hmm. at some point. That ambition really is triggered by regulation. And at that point, I came really to the conclusion for myself that regulation is really a driver of innovation. Usually you would think about it the other way around, right? Less regulation would mean more innovation, more freedom to mm-hmm. move for companies and so on. But I'm not so sure about that anymore. But also, practically speaking, everybody is afraid of collecting data, primary data. Everyone or many companies, they're not sure how to access this data. Usually it is much less so of a problem than everybody would expect. Mm-hmm. You get most of the data right away out of your silos within your company. You just have to talk to the right people. And even beyond that, you can start with secondary data as mm-hmm. well. You don't have to always have primary data. Of course, that's preferred. But if you don't have certain data, for example, about your energy mix, you can start with secondary data. But that should not prevent you from starting. Right.
Just to clarify, secondary data, and that example would be taking industry averages.
For example, you can use industry averages or the energy mix within your region yeah. that your plant, for example, is based in. Things like that. You can always start with robust secondary
yeah.
data.
Yeah. Okay. One question that just was in my mind for a couple of minutes. I should have asked it at the beginning, but can you explain us what the relation is of a company that is based in Turkey caring uh-huh. about the CSRD reporting?
Yeah. So it's a multinational company. So they have entities in Europe itself. Mm-hmm. So that would qualify them for reporting alone. And also that's the general understanding that is now becoming more and more apparent, I think, with everyone that even if you're a tier 3 supplier or tier 4 or even further up or downstream, at some point the larger fish in the value chain will demand you to report towards their reporting obligations. So you better get ready to report, even if you're not based in Europe even. But if you're one of your key customers or your key market is Europe, then I'm afraid there's no way not to report.
Yeah. Or I'm afraid that innovation will hit you, right? Because as you said, it's a trigger for innovation then also. Yep. You mentioned silos in an organization. I've seen sometimes reporting frameworks manifesting existing structures, also when it comes then to optimization. Let's say procurement is trying to optimize the circular share and the inflow, whereas product management might be tempted to optimize the outflow, and everyone just optimizes his or her own target KPI. They might miss the opportunity to move to a just higher level by changing a product or a process altogether. They only see together sitting together and optimizing together. Is it something that is already visible or something you try to mitigate?
I think in that regard, we have to look at the value creation of the company. Mm-hmm. So usually, there are very few, let's put it this way, very few companies that are born circular. Usually, they're born linear, and they have optimized all of their processes and everything to be a very efficient linear business, right? And that ensures cash flows. That have ensured cash flows for them and their shareholders for many decades. The rules are now changing. So the future cash flows, they depend on your transition towards circularity as a company. And the word transition implies already that it is not a 0-to-1 switch that you can just can use in order to be circular. It is the goal to become more circular over time. That's important. And there are different levers for companies, but in a broader sense, they're two, right? You can create new value that is then kind of born circular. So new business models, for example, or new products that can coexist with your existing portfolio. And then there's a value migration. So from linear to more circular value that you create. And if you look at the existing circular linear structures, of course, you then have different departments with different skill sets that then can engineer the overall circularity target. So for example, we have a case in ICT products. They have been pretty well developed in their product department. So they have quite a high figure of material circularity within their core products. So then naturally, we were turning to packaging, because packaging is also part of the overall circularity equation. And there has been lots of potential there. So the specific departments were then really focusing their resources to optimize packaging. And that has been then a strategic action that could also be linked to a specific target. And that's good. That's great to manage the transition this way. Yeah.
Okay, got it. And of course, it always remains a, let's say, management task to enable collaboration and have the culture for innovation. So a reporting framework won't address that, or at least that's not the purpose.
That's for sure. And you see many great leaders in companies who really have a circular mindset. If you look at BMW, for example, I think their CEO is absolutely crushing the strategic end on making circularity happen, as for him it is really a key strategic pillar of the company, and he was setting really ambitious targets, but also backing them up with investment, with new resources and capabilities built up within the company. And there are plenty of examples for great leaders that that are really turning towards circular mindsets.
Yeah, that's true. And we need it, more of them. Yeah. One last question is about the transition or the transition nature of the CTI. As you know, Circularity FM is about business models and circular business models. Do you see with the perspective of CTI that certain business model patterns are, let's say, per design more circular or have a higher potential when it comes to scoring good in the CTI than other business models?
So I'm sure there's a great study about that somewhere out there, right? Looking at the actual circularity of different sectors. I would look at it from an opportunity perspective, really. There are some priority sectors that have been defined in the EU that really should and must adopt more circularity within their business models because they consume a lot of resources and they just cannot decouple for now their economic growth from their resource consumption. And naturally, this is a problem. We are already now consuming way too many resources. So if you look at these priority sectors, they're the ones that now have to act, and also these are the companies that naturally we're working with the most. Yeah. To give a few examples, of course, it's textiles. We all working in the industry or working within circularity know that overproduction is part of the business mm-hmm. model for now, and it is accepted. Mm-hmm. For now. However, there are many opportunities for fashion companies to still thrive and create value while being less dependent of virgin inflow of materials. And as we said in the middle of our conversation, there is always a way to optimize your circularity measures. There's always a way to find the right people within your organization or outside of your organization to engage with and make things happen that still ensure profitability while being more sustainable, while being more circular. And that really is true for each and every sector. Of course, some sectors, they have to be phased out, that's for sure. But some are just necessary. We need to build houses in which we can mm-hmm. live. So the construction sector is very important for us, and we really have to help leaders, but also investors, to put bigger emphasis on the circular transition.
But actually, that's quite an encouraging statement. So do you say there is an opportunity in many sectors and industries?
Absolutely. There are more opportunities out there that we even know of if we just start. And you should start with putting down the numbers, develop a plan, and then I'm sure you will find ways to come up with great solutions.
That's an awesome closing remark, Patrick. Thanks a lot for this overview about CTI as a measurement framework and the innovation that results from that to serve a more circular economy.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. May I just give a very short pitch for everyone that would like to understand better and in more detail about CTI and circular transitions and how you can make that happen. We do offer for corporate customers, but also for other initiatives, a free of charge masterclass on this very specific topic. So please reach out to us and we will give you a deep dive, maybe specifically tailored even to your industry, on how you can use CTI to set out your circularity strategy.
Great. Great offer. This podcast is about spreading the knowledge, and it's great that you do the same, especially with such a valuable method. I'll put the links into the show notes, and I guess everyone is invited to reach out to you directly. Thanks again for sharing this experience here, but also thanks again for making this offer to everyone listening. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.